Hello, everyone. Thanks for the introduction. I'm Amir Rahmati, and I'm going to talk to you today about TARDIS, which is a technique for timekeeping in embedded devices that don't have access to real-time clocks or a trustable source of time. In this work, I'm going to show you how we can use memory decay to mitigate brute force attacks on smart cards. Now, the type of devices that I want to talk to you today about are devices that you all can find now in your pockets. Transportation cards, metro cards, payment cards like Visa and MasterCard, which are equipped with RFID tags, and employment IDs, and even your passports that some of you might have used to come here. Now, these devices are all belong to a group of devices that we call batteryless devices. And none of them have access to a trustworthy source of time, and so they don't have any idea of time it takes between different transactions that you might have with them. Now, the things that I want to emphasize about these devices are that they have no long-running clocks, and they are only powered when they are being queried. So an adversary can control when to power the device and when it's not powered, and when the clock on the device is working. And they also hold secrets that you generally want to keep to yourself and don't want others to copy them or share with them. But these devices, like all other devices, have many security vulnerabilities that have been shown throughout many papers, many of them published here. And the problem that many of these papers have noticed in these devices are the large number of queries that you can put to these cards and these embedded devices without any way for them to rate limit you, and the ability to use these devices as an encryption oracle and to exploit these. For example, in the hack of DESFire, a MIFARE DESFire chip, you can easily put 4,000 traces in a matter of minutes without any problems and with a simple setup. Now, these threats, these attacks, comes in many shapes and form. They could be power analysis, reverse engineering, or simple brute force attacks on these cards that would break them and enable you to get the secret key of these cards and then to duplicate them. And all of these, as I said, was because there's no speed limits to querying these devices. You can have unlimited query rate to these devices, and there is nothing that can stop you beside physical limitations. Now, we classify these attacks as semi-invasive attacks. It means the adversary have access to the device and can query it as he or she pleases, but doesn't physically modify the device to attack it. So we're not talking here about probing the chip or attacking it or using ion beams, for example, to attacking the card. But we talk about many different types of attacks that are common in these devices. Here's a table of five of such attacks, and you can see that the number of queries needed to hack these devices and to break them range from 200 to thousands and thousands of queries, and they can be done in a relatively short amount of time. 8 hours for or 150,000 queries isn't a lot and can be manageable. And the adversaries can break, when we say that the adversaries break these cards, we mean that they will manage to duplicate these cards by getting access to the secret key they hold. Now, our contribution, which we call TARDIS, is a timekeeping technique based on SRAM decay, which is one of the most common elements in digital circuits. With TARDIS, we enable these devices to have a sense of time and to rate limit these queries to slow down any brute force attacks that might occur. Now, to explain how TARDIS works, I first have to explain how SRAM decay works. This is a SRAM cell, and it consists of four transistors, and I don't want to go into the EE details because I don't think anyone is interested. What you need to know here is that SRAM is a volatile memory. So when the power is cut off from this cell, it will lose its state and it will go into an undefined state. And when the power is turned back on, it can either go to a 1 or a 0, and the value it goes to is random and isn't predefined and isn't related to the previous value it holds. Now, if we have an array of SRAM cells and we power them down, the next time we turn back the power on, we see that some of them have switched to 0 and some of them have remained 1, and that is again because of the random value that they will turn back on into. And we use the amount of flipped SRAM bits here to estimate how much time has passed and how much the power off time is. And how we can do that is this SRAM decay and this cell decays and this cell and these value flips doesn't happen instantaneously. They will happen over time. So this is an image of another TARDIS. This is, for those who know, this is a character in Doctor Who TV series. It's a time machine. And we store this picture in memory, and after different amount of time, we'll look again at the picture. And the first picture probably isn't clear, but you can see that in the second picture and the third picture, the picture will decay and degrade. And after 210 seconds, you can literally can't recognize the picture, and you can say it's nearly a random bits of white and black. And this is a bitmap image, in case anyone wonders. So if you have another picture like this, and someone asks you how much time has passed, you can probably guess from the pictures and the time given below them that this picture belongs to some time between 190 and 210 seconds. And so this way, you have a notion of time, and you can estimate how much time has passed for this picture to be taken. Now, we use the same intuition for TARDIS. In our algorithm, we first initialize SRAM, and we initialize the bits to 1, but it can be initialized to any other value. You can initialize them to 0, store a picture in there, or use any random pattern. And then we power off the SRAM, and these cells would start to decay. And after an amount of time, we would turn the power back on and then compute the SRAM decay based on the number of flip bits and use this data to estimate how much time has passed. Now, temperature is generally considered to have a large effect on memory decay, and it's the same in SRAM cells. I will discuss later how this will affect the SRAM and how we deal with it. We discussed in our paper four factors that influence the SRAM decay: SRAM size and the circuit capacitance, temperature, and chip variation between chips of same model. I'll go into detail for three of them. I should mention SRAM size first. SRAM is a particularly double-edged thing here. As you increase the SRAM size, your circuit will start to use more and more power to work with that SRAM, and so it will use the energy stored in it faster, and so you will have faster decay time in TARDIS. But you will also have a larger SRAM size to better estimate time. Now, you will get a more clear picture of what I mean about this later. Now, in our experimental setup, we did most of our experiments in a thermal chamber to control the temperature and use the thermometer to check whether or we reached the correct temperature before conducting our test. Our thermal chamber had a precision of 1 degree centigrade, and our thermometer had a precision of 2 degrees centigrade. So our temperatures might differ a little between different tests, but it's negligible. We also ran our test in a Texas Instruments MSP430 microcontroller. And most of our results are from that chip. We also used the data acquisition unit, or DAC for short, to control the time of power ons and power offs of these of our experiments. Now, the results of our experiments, this is a cleaned up version of one of our results, show a three stage decay pattern. There's a first stage in which no memory bit has decayed. The chip still holds enough energy to keep those values in the SRAM. And so if you turn the chip back on during those times, no memory cell has flipped. And so TARDIS can give you one bit of info, and that is a time less than, for example, here 160 seconds has passed. And there's a second stage, which is relatively shorter. And during that time, the memory will decay and degrade. And you can estimate the time more clearly by computing the percentile of flipped bits. And there's a third section in which the memory has completely decayed from that point on. Here it's about 230. The memory has completely decayed, and again, TARDIS will give you one bit of info, and that is a time longer than 230 seconds has passed. This is really similar to an hourglass. In the first stage, you have a full hourglass, and the time hasn't started to pass. And there's a second, relatively short stage in which the sand will drain from the top to bottom. And then there's a first stage which you will say your hourglass has expired. Now, we tested TARDIS using different capacitor sizes to emulate different circuit capacitances. As you can see, our capacitor sizes range from using no capacitor, which relies only on the inner capacitance of the circuit, to a 10 millifarad capacitor. And the times we get, the expiration times we get from TARDIS for these different capacitors range from seconds to days. But when we talk about our applications, smart cards generally have inner capacitance of between 0 and 10 microfarad, but there are batteryless sensors that have capacitors of up to 100 millifarad. We also tested TARDIS on different temperatures. These are two lines tested at room temperature, 28 degrees and 50 degrees Celsius. And as you can see, and as we would expect, the memory will decay faster as the temperature goes higher and higher. But it's worth noting that the three-stage curve still holds across different temperatures. And also, even at 50 degrees Celsius, you still have a non-zero expiration time. And that is the thing that we use to mitigate the brute force attacks. This is the results of with some more data on some other temperatures. And you can see that the flow holds. Still, when you increase the temperature, the decay time would decrease, but the free stage decay still holds. Now, to compensate for this and to compensate for temperature, what we did was after each power up, we would usually compute the SRAM decay from the previous run of TARDIS. And What we do after this is to analyze the temperature. We use the temperature sensor, which is available in many of these chips. And based on the response we get from that sensor, we compute the decay time by using the lookup table that we previously restored in the chip. After this, we would initialize the SRAM again, and we will be ready for the next power off and power on, so we can estimate the time again. Now, we implemented TARDIS on UMassMoo, which is a computational RFID tag made by our lab. And we equipped these tags with piezo elements, and we used 5 of these tags and ran trials on them. And what we did was we asked the tags to buzz if they have been queried before their TARDIS clock has expired. And the result we got was the expiration time of 12 seconds with the standard deviation of 0.11 seconds, which is a pretty precise result for 5 different samples of Moo. Now, what would this mean for the attacks that I discussed before? These were the 5 attacks that I previously showed you, and the number of queries and the time it takes for us to break these chips and cards. Now, if we assume the same 12-second TARDIS that we implemented before and use that TARDIS clock on these devices, what we get is an orders of magnitude increase in the time you require to break these devices. A 2-second attack will become a 40-minute attack, and a 7-hour attack will take more than a month to finish. Some might say that, well, still a 40-minute attack is still possible. And yes, we don't deny that. But you should note that TARDIS can be implemented without any hardware changes. This is just a software update that can be easily implemented. And it will significantly raise the bar for these attackers and make these attacks much, much harder than was previously done. But TARDIS, like any other thing, can be attacked. Two of the most likely attacks that we could come up with was to cool or heat TARDIS. By cooling it, you would make the memory decay slower, and so you will increase the TARDIS time. And by heating it, you will make the memory decay go faster, and make the TARDIS expire faster. Now, I discussed how we can use the thermal sensor for this, but there's another attack that the thermal sensor can't solve, and that is to pulse the device and to heat up and cool it back down between queries. So you will heat up, for example, the card and make the memory decay faster and cool it back down before turning it on, so the thermal sensor wouldn't know about the temperature change, and so it can't compensate for that. There are two limitations. There are two ways to discuss on how we can deal with this. The first thing is the physical limitations. For the attacks that we previously discussed, you need to query the device hundreds and hundreds of times per second, and it's not physically possible to heat up and cool down on the chip that many amounts of time in such a short duration. And also, for longer TARDIS clocks, for example, for TARDIS clocks of minutes and hours and days in which these attacks might be possible, you can use hardware thermal fuses in these devices to prevent anyone from heating them up too much or cooling them down. And this would cause these devices to break and be unusable if they go out of the normal working range. And also, many of these devices also have a standard working range. For example, the MSB430 that we ran our tests on has a working temperature of maximum of 85 degrees and minimum of minus 40 degrees Celsius. So it's not possible to increase the temperature to hundreds of degrees and expect the memory to remain sound and undamaged. There are also other applications that we discuss in our paper and other places that we can use TARDIS. For example, we can use TARDIS to implement timeout in authentication protocols. TARDIS can detect that it hasn't received the response for a set amount of time, and so asks, and so doesn't accept the authentication and the answer from the device. You can also implement temporary ownership. Some of you might be familiar with the resurrecting duckling problem. And also, TARDIS, we think TARDIS can replace the real-time clock on some low-power sensors that don't need as accurate of a time measurement as they currently have. And they can have a notion of time using TARDIS and use much less power during their downtime. Also, in a 2008 paper, Avian showed how we can hack e-passports by querying them. And we can use that, we can again use TARDIS to mitigate this attack. There's also a branch of cryptography called time-release cryptography that discusses how we can make sure someone can't open a message for a set amount of time. Using TARDIS can make this problem go away by simply forcing a time limitation for the cryptography protocol to go. There are many related works that I can't talk about. I don't have much time left, so I will go through three of them very fast. Data retention SRAM has been discussed in the 2001 paper here, and Gutman et al. Discussed how you can the properties of SRAM decay and the effect of temperature on SRAM. And SRAM has been used to generate random numbers and identify chips in a paper called Ferns by one of my collaborators in 2007. And also the same decay properties on different volatile memory, on DRAM, has been used in the cold boot attack paper in 2008 to retrieve secret key from computer memories. Finally, to conclude, TARDIS, you should remember from TARDIS that TARDIS is a mechanism that uses memory decay to estimate time, and it would make brute force attacks orders of magnitudes harder on the battery-less devices. And TARDIS is just a software update, so it can easily be implemented on the current devices that you have in your pockets. And TARDIS is a technique that uses remanence decay for good for change. Thank you.
We definitely have time for questions, so please go ahead.
Hi, Ian Goldberg, University of Waterloo. So the attacker wins when the memory gets scrambled faster than TARDIS thinks it should. Right, because then TARDIS thinks that more time has expired and has elapsed and will allow the next query.
Well, it depends on the application. Like, if you're implementing, for example, timeouts, then the adversary don't want the time to go faster. It wants the TARDIS.
Right. Okay. But in the examples you gave, where you're trying to do a brute force attack,
in those examples, yes.
So in that situation, you talked about temperature as one way the attacker could control how fast. But what about other ways? Now I'm actually way out of my element here, but I can imagine you can hit it with an electron beam or an ion beam or something and cause lots of randomness to happen in the SRAM. What about something like that?
Well, that's correct. In my threat model, I discussed that the most common attacks, and there are ways to physically modify the chip. Yes, you can. Like physically use probes to go inside the chip and do all kind of stuff. But this is just a way to raise the bar and make brute force attacks harder. So yes, TARDIS is susceptible to those attacks, but it can still work on current devices and make them much harder to brute force.
Hi, Perry Metzger, University of Pennsylvania. You contended at one point that it would be infeasible to pulse the temperature of the surface of the chip, you know, many, many times a second. But isn't the surface of the chip, you know, a very, very tiny volume? And it also has an enormous surface area compared to its volume. I would think that it should in fact be possible to pulse the temperature of the chip dozens or more times a second. Have you tried getting someone to do the thermal transport calculation for you?
No, we haven't, but a thing to notice is that these chips are generally very small in order, they have like 300 gates.
Yeah, but that makes it worse. The fact that they're tiny means that they have very small volume, so you can change the temperature very quickly.
I haven't done the thermal calculations. I should probably like contact someone else to do that because I'm not eligible to do those. But if you have such a small chip that you can, it's still hundreds of times per second is, as much as I know, is outside the physical limitations of the building elements and the building elements of chips, but.
I used to work in a physical chemistry lab, and we could do stuff like that. It very, very, very rapidly could change the temperature of something in milliseconds. But never mind. We can talk offline.
Thanks.
Christo Bojanov, Stanford. So there was a transition between the 1 bit before 150 seconds, 1 bit after 200 plus seconds, and using that to rate limit. So are you using that directly, or are you doing something like selectively resetting portions of the memory every time so you get a finer resolution at the two ends of the spectrum?
Well, the way you can do it, for example, is you will program the card to refuse to answer to a query if a TARDIS clock hasn't expired and if a set amount of time hasn't passed.
Yeah, but from what I see is unless you do something in addition, all you can see, I mean, assuming your device is being used once every minute, all you can see is that the minute hasn't elapsed. Right? I mean, that's your resolution. Do you have a way to improve the resolution?
Well, we discussed the second stage. There is a second stage which you can have a more precise time measurement, and you can use different circuits with different capacitor sizes to change where that second stage will be, and use that for other applications that you might want to use TARDIS for. But for this application, this 1 bit info is enough.
I see. So this is so that would be a hardware modification. What I was wondering is, instead of that, could you maybe reset only half of the memory every time? Assuming your device is being used frequently, you can actually have a little bit of a trace.
Well, changing the amount of SRAM you initialize really doesn't matter because the SRAM will lose its state at the same rate. So after the set amount of time, like that you previously have like 50% of bits decay, you would still have 50% of that small portion decay. So that portion and that percentile doesn't change if you change the SRAM size you do the TARDIS calculations on.
Okay, so even if you don't reset the SRAM, mm-hmm. it will stop decaying when you power it up and only start decaying again.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes, correct.
All right.
Okay, and even for different application, it doesn't require the hardware modification. You mentioned that hardware modification. Each chip currently has a TARDIS clock inside it, but the time of the TARDIS clock might not precisely match the application that you might have in mind. If you want a TARDIS clock that suits your need, you might need the hardware modification, but for some applications, there's already a TARDIS clock in there.
Sure, understood. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's thank the speaker. And-